Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to our new show, What a Success, formerly the Writing Mama Show, here at BTR's World of Ink Network. Be prepared to call in later and chat with our hosts, V.S. Grenier, Marcia Casper Cook, myself, J.D. Holliday, and our very special guest today, Jason Lane, here at BTR's World of Ink Network on What a Success. It's 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on August 19, 2011. What a Success can be listened to live here at blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you like at the same address or on iTunes by searching World of Ink Network. As I mentioned, we'll be taking your calls towards the end of the show. If you'd like to call in and ask a question of our guest, the phone number is 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259. Or you can join us here in the chat room at Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening.
Hello, everybody. Hi. And we're welcoming Jason. And Hi, Jason. Jason's been on my show. He's been on A Good Story is a Good Story, and now we're on this show. And we're welcoming Jan back because we actually had one show before. And because we were supposed to be taking off, Virginia and I, and we never did, I guess. We thought we were, but anyway, it's a really good celebration day. It's a one-year celebration of Magic Blocks, and I'm sure anybody that knows me, I have it on my site. I talk about it a lot, and it's just a, it's a great site for children's books, and we're going to have some special guests on. I know for sure Frieda Roberts is coming on, and Frieda Roberts is the one that told me about this last year. And at first she told me, and I went, okay, fine, I'll do it. And then I never did it. And then about a month later, she said, do it. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And then I didn't do it. And then I did it. And then I love it. I think it's a great site. And I know there's a lot of people on there, and we want a lot of more people on there because Jason will explain exactly what we do, what he does on it. But it's just fun for the kids, and we're great. We're really grateful that he came here to celebrate his one-year anniversary. So happy birthday, Jason.
Thank you, Marcia.
One year.
Thank you guys for having me on the
show
again.
Happy
birthday. Yeah. if you haven't seen our happy birthday video yet, it's really fun. We actually asked all of our authors and publishers to put together a little clip of, you know, themselves or the families and their kids and things like that to basically sing happy birthday and saying happy birthday. And it came out pretty nice. I'm actually really happy with the video. So thank you, everyone who also contributed to the video. That was really cool.
Well, where do you want to begin? You want to begin, you know, what, I will just say, we'll start off at the beginning because a lot of people don't know what it is. Okay, how did you come up with this idea, and what is the idea so everybody knows exactly what we're talking about today?
Sure. So Magic Blocks is a kids ebook library, and what we do is we allow authors, publishers, pretty much anybody who has a kid's book, we let them publish it for free, and then what we do is we sell subscription access passes, memberships out to parents and schools and daycares and anybody who wants to read the books, and they can buy it in increments of as low as 1 month or 3 months or a year. And then what we do is we split that revenue back with the authors and publishers based on book distribution. So essentially, Magic Blocks is a free digital distribution and marketing platform for authors and publishers for kids' books. The way we came up with this idea, you know, originally 2 years ago, or actually 3 years ago now, we sat in a room and we brainstormed and we thought, what are all the things that we want to do project-wise? And we thought, you know, we wanted something that was user-generated content. We wanted something that was subscription-based. And I'm a father of a now almost six-year-old boy, and I wanted to do something with kids. And my son inspired me. He loves reading. And so I thought, you know, what a better site than to, you know, support the ebook trend that's just starting out. Yeah, exactly. So we thought, you know, we looked on the market. There were a couple of little things here and there, and we saw the ebook trend going, the iPad and the Nook. Actually, the iPad hadn't even come out yet. It was the Nook that was sort of paving the way. And we said, there's a trend here. Let's go jump on that. And so what we did is we came up with the site, and we started, you know, building it in our spare time. And we launched it actually on August 1st of 2010 with one book from Claudia Graziano called Meerkat Safari. It's a great book, beautiful illustrations.
Oh,
she told me...
you know what? Honestly, that's a gorgeous...
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous book. It's unbelievable. The illustrations, and it's beautiful. It really is.
Yeah, in fact, there was a lot of inspiration there from the author's side, because it really proved to me and showed to me that there was a lot of authors like her out there. And I did a lot of research and went to a lot of various SCBWI groups over here in the Bay Area and met a lot of these authors, including a lot of you. And just made me realize there's just a ton of content out there, not only from mainstream publishers who I'll give you a little bit of update as well on that front, because
right.
We've been to a lot of publishing shows this year, conferences like BEA and the Library Association down in New Orleans. And I've spoken to a lot of the mainstream publishers, and they're all interested. They move a little slower than individuals, but they are all interested in adding their books to our library. So...
Yeah, because you know why? You know why? Because you know, like, not everybody is going to have an iPad, or you know. And what happens now is you can see it. You can use your computer, so it's fine, you know. And that's one of the things a lot of people probably don't know is that you can use it on your computer, on your phone, and it comes up everywhere. You can use it. And
exactly.
I guess
you don't have
to have an iPad.
Yeah, the current implementation of the site, the current version, it supports, you know, obviously any desktop or laptop web browser. So you can read books anywhere on the go, at home, you know, anywhere you basically have an internet connection. And you can also read books on your iPad, your iPhone, any Android device, including Google TV. So it's, you know, our whole vision is...
You know, it's almost amazing because, you know, when you were on last time, it wasn't possible.
Yeah,
it just happened so fast.
Exactly. We launched it. We had a few books, and we were really focused on getting more books at the time. And we started to, you know, work on supporting an iPad and an Android device. And, you know, we're even making further improvements on that. You know, I can talk a little bit about that later. But, you know, we're going to be actually launching an app in the App Store and the Google Marketplace towards the end of this year. So,
Jason, I have a question for you. This is Virginia.
Sure.
Because I know that you and I have chatted back and forth because I was going to get my picture book, Baby Seeing Sugar Paw, eventually uploaded to Magic Blocks. I just have to find time in my crazy schedule to do that. But what about authors who, because, I mean, there's a lot of authors who have great books that have self-published, but they've gone through sites like CreateSpace where they don't have an ISBN number or Lulu. Are they able to upload their books without an ISBN number?
Absolutely, yeah. The ISBN number we put in there not as a required field, as more an optional field, so that if anybody happens to be searching for your book for whatever reason, they only know your ISBN number, it's just another piece of data on the site that people will be able to find your book. So if they happen to, you know, grab it off of some other site and they want to search the web and they end up finding our site, it's just another piece of data. So, no, they don't have to have that, and it's not required, absolutely. What we do, just so you know, any parents or schools out there, what we do is, you know, we actually review all the books that go on. We don't just let the books go on without anybody approving them. So
right,
we want
to
make sure that, you know, the content's appropriate for kids between preschool and about 13 years old is our target market right now. And And so we actually review every page. We look to make sure the pictures are right. And you know, not only for quality purposes, to make sure that everything looks good, you know, and you can read it and the pictures are square and all of the, you know, all the pages are formatted correctly, but just that the content is appropriate as well. And then we hit approve and it goes on. So it definitely goes through a QA process. But as far as, you know, having to be published mainstream, have an ISBN number, no, it's not necessary. You can be a completely independent author. You know, it helps if you have your book, you know, published by a reputable company or at least created by a reputable, you know, designer and author,
right,
and have it edited and make sure there's no typos and things.
Right.
Our service isn't necessarily, you know, we're a marketing and distribution service. We're not a content creation and editing service, right?
Right.
So
right.
Some people have asked me, you know, oh, can you lay this out for me? I'm like, well, no, not really.
No. That's a whole other thing. You know, and the other thing is, if they have trouble downloading it, putting it in, if they're uploading it, you know, you will do that for them because they shouldn't just forget about doing it because they can't do it. You'll do it, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
that's what we've been doing, actually. We've actually been doing a lot of that. I would say we're probably about 60% of the time we're actually managing the processing of the books. And so what we've realized internally is that we actually have to support native PDF uploads so that we don't have to convert things into JPEG images. Because right now the way it works from an author or publisher standpoint is you have to take your – because everyone has their books in a PDF format typically, right?
That's what
the illustrators and the designers will give you when you're done. And so what we're going to do is we're basically going to allow you to just upload PDFs and it'll dynamically create the book for you. And no more converting to JPEGs.
That's
coming.
That's going to be great. That's great.
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
In the meantime, you can still upload PDFs, but we're going to manually, you know, we're going to do it for you. We'll take it on. It's the only thing that we're, I guess the precursor there is that, or the caveat there is that if you want to do it that way, you're going to wait maybe 2 to 3 weeks before you see it on the site. Versus mm-hmm. if you want to upload it and convert it yourself, you can have it up within a couple of days. So,
Jason, do we still need to format each page into a JPEG and a certain size?
Right now you do. Yeah,
right now
the pages, what the system is supporting is 700 pixel tall JPEG image, and you can export that out of your PDF within a matter of a couple of minutes. But if you don't have Photoshop or you don't have the right skills or knowledge around how to do that, it could get a little tricky. We've tried to do some videos and some help documents, and we've put that on the site to help you guys make that a little easier. But for the most part, you either don't have the time or don't have the knowledge or skill set. And so we're okay doing that to a certain extent for you guys. We're not charging that. We're not charging for that service because we realize that's our limitation. And so we'll do that. And it's nice because once it's done, the book's up on the site, and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Right.
But, you know, obviously there's no guarantees as far as, like, when we'll get to it. And that's really
Well, I know people have to, I mean, even when you put it on Smashwords or any of the things, it takes time sometimes for them to put it out for you. Sometimes it doesn't automatically go sometimes.
Sure.
You have to check it over. And, you know, but I think that people shouldn't shy away because they get, you know, they think maybe they don't want you to, you know, they have to do it. So I think a lot of people can't do it. So this is good that they now know that you will do that. So they'll wait a couple of weeks, but at least they'll be on your site.
Exactly.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, Jason.
And you know, I mean, yeah, if you do have the skill set or you have somebody that can do it for you, it's really easy, actually. I mean, we had a publisher, Twin Sisters Publications, or Twin Sisters Productions, and they uploaded their entire catalog, about 75 books, in a matter of 2 weeks. And so they took they started from PDFs, and those had audio files attached to them as well. So,
I wanted to talk to you about the audio. So people can put the audio files in themselves.
That's a really good feature because it's actually not that complicated and it's simple enough. If you have the audio file produced already, you just upload the audio file to the book and it becomes an audio book.
They can do it online or.
You could. If they don't have the audio file, then it won't be an audio book. You have to bring, just like you have to bring the book, you have to bring the audio file as well.
Okay, fine.
We don't have that as a service either. So.
Yeah. And are the people listening to the audios? Are they listening to the audios? Are they listening to the audios a lot? Or Good.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people have been really happy with that feature. In fact, I got some comments from a teacher who teaches kids with autism, and he said that it actually helps a lot with those students because it helps them stay focused and engaged in the book.
Oh, that's
and
great.
He wanted more. So, yeah, it was
really
nice
really
to hear
great.
that we're helping kids with special needs. So.
That's really great. Yeah. That's really great.
Now, I have a question because I know that you have books on the site, but have you guys thought about branching into the different children's magazines at all onto the site as well?
You know, you and I have talked about that, and I definitely want to explore that more. So you and I need to talk about that after the show and get your and get going with that so we can test that out for sure. I think having kids and parents, content that they can read, and it'll be just segmented differently. You know, there's books and then there's magazines. Yeah, I mean we can definitely discuss that.
Yeah, there's so many new things happening, which is really good, you know. And I mean, you know, even from the time you were on, it's just everything has changed. I mean, you know, with all the iPad, I mean, there's just so much more capability that people can use. And people were saying, oh, it'll be a few years, but now it's not. It's happening like now, you know.
We keep in mind, I mean, this is a startup. This is something that we do in our spare time. This isn't even something that we're doing as our full-time job yet.
Right.
That could change in the future, but right now this is just something that we're doing as you know a side project.
It's a good project. I mean, you know, you work hard at this, and I know you do, and you're not saying that, but I'm going to say that because you are, because I know that you're
Thank
up
you.
A lot of hours doing it, and I know you're not going to. But I mean, you know, all of us know that this is not a side job for any of us because we all say, oh yeah, it's not that much time, but we all spend a lot of time doing everything because it just doesn't. You know, you don't do a radio show, you don't do a book, you don't do a site like yours just by you know 1 hour a day. It doesn't work that way. It's not a side job. It's more like two jobs you have. Whatever other job you do this.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. No, I have a normal 9-to-5, you know, day job, and then I have this that we work on the weekends and at night. And my wife gets mad at me because I, you know, I stay up till 1 a.m. a lot of times, you know, working on stuff. And I do it because I'm dedicated to the project. And I know that this is something that will eventually grow into something really big. And it's really great to see, you know, the support that we're getting from a lot of the authors and publishers and even parents. And whenever I get an email or a text or a tweet or something from a school or a homeschooler or a, you know, a teacher and saying, oh, the great site, we love it, blah, 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 you know, it's just, it always just helps fuel the fire and keeps me going. So, it's great. And we're getting a lot more support here coming into the end of the year. So...
you know, what about the now you say till 13 years old or you said 13 right or
yeah we've got a lot
what,
of
what
you
type
know,
of books do you have what
on...
type of books are you looking for that age group though I mean that's a tough one it is young adult though
it's considered young adult anything after fifth grade you know it's crazy because I've been to quite a few conferences this last year everything from you know little conferences that the Bay Area Parent Magazine puts on in you know shopping malls to the LA Times Book Festival or the New York Book Festival and the types of books that young adults fifth grade sixth grade seventh graders read are novels I mean they're reading four or five page books now and so we have a handful of those we don't have a ton you know we've got just over 200 books now and we've done that in the last year just basically by word of mouth and the little bit of marketing and things that I've done, a lot of social media.
I myself have a Holocaust book, Salem More Than a Survivor, and I think sometimes I might have marketed it wrong at the beginning because, when Salem, she's still alive, she goes and talks to, at the Holocaust Museum, she gets all the kids that are 12 years old. And they love her. They love her. And I wasn't sure. I thought maybe it should be young adult. That's a really tough thing. But I know that they're reading her book and they're liking it, you know, and it's more about, like, her life story afterwards, too. And they're very interested in this. So I'm listening. I wasn't even thinking about putting it on, but I know the teachers like it and the schools are liking it and the kids like it. And that's because it's such a tough area between, like, 11 and 13. It's very tough. But you're right. They're more adult and they're reading regular books, you know. It's not just a child's book anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when kids get into middle school, they're starting to explore a lot more with social activities and things, and they're old enough now where they can, like, go out on their own without their parents next to them everywhere they go. And so there's probably quite a few, I don't know what the percentage is or the breakdown, but I'm sure there's quite a few kids that probably opt not to read things. They probably spend video games and going to the mall and stuff. And so the more we can make reading fun for those kids and make it more technology, inept or technology, aware or whatever, and give them something that they can kind of be proud about and go, yeah, this is cool. I'm reading on my iPad, you know, or I'm taking this book with me on vacation or whatever. And they don't have to get up and go to the library because they're probably opt to go to the mall before they go to the library.
Right.
And so
Virginia,
what?
Okay, I wanted to, what do you think about that age group? What kind of books do you think that they like at 11, you know, at 11 to 13?
I'm here. That's such a hard thing only because, I have a 15-year-old. Sorry, I'm bringing him up again. And, he... And for, like, the boys, they're more reluctant readers, so it's, like, hit and miss. I mean, we really didn't see a huge jump in boys reading until, like, the Harry Potter series came out.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if a lot of, and I'm sure people who write in the YA genre know this, but a lot of parents didn't realize that when Twilight came out, because, it's that vampire romance YA kind of novel.
Yeah.
That everybody's like, oh, teenage girls. Well, that's actually not true. And if you have teenagers or, have friends who have teenagers, I'm sure they've all heard the term emo, which is basically the new version of the 80s punks. And when I say punk, I mean, punk rocker punk, with the mohawks and crazy hair. But they don't dress like that. They just wear all black and have black fingernails.
Yeah.
Kind of like the old version of Hot Topic, basically,
is
what the emo kids are. But the boys within that group, I know for a fact, have all read pretty much Twilight. So, and I haven't really read the series because it just wasn't something that appealed to me, even though I write in the children's market.
Yeah.
But when I found out that boys were reading it, because I knew it was, like I said, more of a vampire romance kind of story for YA girls, and I'm like, what? Boys? Because my brother read it, who's a year and a half older than my son. I was like, what? Oh, he's reading what? And my dad was just like, yeah, he's reading Twilight. He really loves it. And my brother, I couldn't get him to pick up a book for the last 6 years, for anything. I tried to give him Aragorn to read, and he read, like, the first few chapters, put it down, never finished reading it. Wasn't interested in Harry Potter at all, unlike my sister. But Twilight he picked up and read, and a lot of his friends read it. So... It's such a hit and miss thing because then you have, like my son who wouldn't read Twilight but would read more like when we had John Wilson on last 2 weeks ago talking about his book, which, his are the historical fiction type books with the blood, gore, and the wars and all of that in there, and that's something my son would pick up.
I was thinking because for Jason, I was thinking if, because we know a lot of people that do a lot of young adult books, Fran Orenstein, they all do, JD, do you know who, I think we talked about that, but she does a lot of books for young adults. I'm just wondering what age group they are. I'd have to ask her. Is that something you're interested in, Jason, something like a little, like, for maybe the 12-year-olds, a lot of that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we started off as a picture book. Young, 1 to 5 year old type, or 1 to 5, first grade to fifth grade type books, but we realized that we got to support kids at a little bit older because I think the decision from a business perspective, the decision point lies with the parents when the kids are under like 7, And the kids have to pull it, and the kids aren't gonna the young kids aren't gonna necessarily pull it and say, "Gosh, I really want Magic Blocks." You know, the parents have to see it as a valuable resource for their kids and push it and say, "Hey, kids, let's go read a Magic Blocks book." But if you have books that are in there for, like, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds, then they have a little bit more of a voice in the household, and they'll say, "Hey, Mom, I heard about Magic Blocks. I really want to sign up for it because they have these cool books," and, you know, and then the parents will, you know, subscribe. And so that's one of the values from a business perspective, is to help, you know, broaden the range to a little bit older demographic.
Yeah, I think, JD, don't you know a lot of people in that do that kind of writing? I think there's a lot of people out there that do that, young adult.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, so there's quite a market there.
Right, so then maybe we should, you know, maybe we'll talk to them about it, you know, because maybe I wasn't really thinking of. Yeah, mm-hmm.
I was going to say, well, that's where Simon Rose's books are at. They're for the middle grade reader to the young adult reader.
We had this guy on a few weeks ago, John Wilson. He was really good, and he does a lot of that market too. So maybe we should talk to, you know, we should bring that up.
Don't pigeonhole Magic Blocks into a fiction book only type of solution. It's definitely a pre-K to 13-year-old range, and it's tough to be that broad, but at the same time, I think we can do it. I think there's no reason why we can't. It's a library.
The other thing is kids that age can do it themselves too. So it's not, you know, they don't need, you know, like approval once the parents see what it is. So yeah, I wasn't thinking about that either, but I think we should think about that. And so next time, we all know people, you know, the three of us for sure do know people, and there are people on the show that have a lot of that, and they're Canadian, a lot of Canadian books, book writers.
Yeah, that's great.
That we've been talking to. So yeah, we'll kind of gear our thought to that. JD, is there anybody else? Is Frida on the phone?
Frida's there. Should we let Frida in?
Yeah, we should let Frida in, because Frida's really how I found out about this, and that's was, you know, she really spread the word around pretty fast. So let's hear Frida.
Frida.
Hi, Frida.
Hey, how are y'all all doing?
We're all good. You know JD?
Yes.
Okay, and you know Virginia and myself and Jason. So that's good, because Frida used to be on the show that Virginia and I were on before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what Jason has done is really wonderful. It gives parents a chance to interact with their children at home. Parents have busy schedules, and they can't always go by the library or, you know, busy lifestyle. So I think what he's done is opened up a whole new world for...
Yes, or buy very expensive books. Expensive. Some of the books, if you go to the, you know, the stores, they're quite expensive, too, to buy for the kids.
And I think it's a very reasonable price that he's asking, you know, for people to be able to read the books, or children and parents to be able to read the books. He's always been really nice, and I support him 100%. I know I've gave him 4 books to put up. He was very helpful in doing that. He was very nice about it. And it really helped with Best of Book Bus, which, you know, I'm an avid supporter of.
You want to talk a little bit about the Best of Bus for a second? Because people might not know what that is.
It's a literary outreach program that was founded by Jennifer Francis after her grandma. And basically what it is she collects books. She has a lot of sponsors behind her right now. They go into underprivileged neighborhoods and places, and they give away free books. And they've partnered with some, like, Transitional, for instance. And they give free eye exams and vouchers, and the children go to the back of the bus if needed, and they get brand-new glasses right away. They're able to pick out, you know, between 1 and 7 books, depending. Older children as well. It's a really good program. She's been doing this for approximately 9 years now, and she tends to get more and more supporters behind her. And it's all about reading and getting children to read, because the literacy rate in the United States of America alone, it's really high. A lot of children don't have access to books. They can't afford to buy books, and there's not as many libraries as there used to be, and because of economics right now, libraries are, you know, their hours are being cut back. the days are being cut back, and they're not able to purchase new books. So it
which
gives
is why you have, and you have Best the Bus. You have it on Jason's site. You have it on Magic Box.
Yes, I do, and I have three others as well. But I like the fact this is a nonprofit, and this is totally about giving to children and giving back to children. I just think it's a wonderful thing, and I think what Jason is doing is really great. I don't think you could find another site with the rate that he charges. You know, he's really fair in pricing.
Right.
He gives authors a chance for their work to be looked at. Everybody, you know, doesn't like the same type of stuff, and every child doesn't like the same type of book. But it gives authors a chance to get their work seen.
I agree.
And hopefully appreciated, you know, by parents and children alike. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity. And if you have a children's book, I think it's, you know, I think you really should talk to him and go to his site and upload your book there, because you're giving to children, and it's just wonderful. I mean, I think it really helps
an
author out as well.
I think it's a great site, and I really want to, you know, I think that's why I really do like to promote it. It's www.magicblox.com, and it's easy, and, you know, and you can just go on there. And I think, Jason, you offered them that they can try it out to see if they like it too, I think, right?
Yeah, right now everybody who goes to the site gets a free month. So all they need to do is just register with an email address, no credit cards or anything like that required. And the nice thing about the way we have things structured right now is that even if you buy a month, it's not recurring. It's not like you're subscribing 1 month at a time. It doesn't auto-renew. So, you know, that's the way it is now. That might not always be the case in the future, but in the meantime, you might as well take advantage of it. If you feel like you know, you want to try it out for a couple of months and then take, you know, maybe not have it for a month, come back, you know, you have a free will. But it's really so cheap to get it 1 year. It kind of doesn't even make sense to waste your time buying a
how much
a
is it for the year? How much is it for the year?
$19.99 for the whole year.
Right. See, that's really great.
That's
why people, it's great. A good price because it's all year. Yeah, so that So it's probably easier just to do it this way, and then they get the full year.
Exactly, and it's just a resource that you don't have to worry about anymore. It's just there, and you can go and let's read a book tonight, or because a lot of the kids probably aren't going to read books every single day, even though it's good to read 15 to 20 minutes a day. But a lot of parents have their own physical books. They go to the library. They get books from school. So this is just an additional resource that they can use, and it's really valuable when, like, especially when the parents are traveling on vacation and they're in the hotel room, and maybe they want to relax for a little while and practice reading and not have to lug all those books with you.
They're heavy. They're heavy, and they get lost, and they get food on them, and it's everything.
Exactly.
I think it's a great site. Frieda, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask Jason or?
How many books does he hope to have by the end of the year? You know, if that was just a general question.
Right.
So we've been adding new books at a rate of anywhere from, one book a week to as high as, 20 books a week. So it averages about 3 to 5 books, new books every week. And so if we keep at this rate, we should have, I don't know how many weeks are left, about 4 months left or so in the year. And so, probably another 50 to 100 books by the end of the year at this rate. But we're also talking to that's just the slow path, right? We're also really actively talking with various publishers who have catalogs of thousands of titles, and so we have a handful of those already. We just added a book from Orca Publishing today, which is really cool.
That's good.
Actually not live yet, but it's in the system, just waiting to be approved, and we just need to make a couple of tweaks to it.
They're getting receptive to this then? Now they're realizing that this is the way it is now. It's going to be
absolutely. You know what it is for them is it's free marketing, right? And it's additional revenue that they didn't have before they add the books. And it's really not that hard to add the books. In fact, I've told many of the publishers that I've talked to, if not all of them, that all they need to do is send me the PDF files for their books, and I'll handle it for them, just like I do for the individual independent authors.
Right.
So.
Right, yeah, because that's what I really wanted to say today, because that's really, because I just want people to, you know, because you're not, when people go to a site and they go, oh, I don't know if I can do this, and they just move on. I don't want them to move on because they can, because you'll help them, and that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah,
and
it's really easy, yeah.
JD, I think you had something to say before, and I didn't, do you have something to say? JD?
I was just going to say that we have some guests in the chat room, and I just asked them if they have any questions, so I'm waiting for
is Claudia,
to see what they
is
have.
Is Claudia there? Is Claudia out? I don't know if Claudia Graziano is.
James and Fran and two other people who I don't know who they are.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Claudia would probably call in if she was.
Okay. No, we have no more callers.
Yeah, she'd probably call in. Okay. Did they ask? Did they want to ask a question? Did Fran have a question?
No one has said yet. I'm waiting.
Okay. All right, fine. All right. Okay. Virginia?
Okay. What? I'm multitasking.
Oh, all right. Okay. When you're trying, I'm thinking, like, is she here or is she not here?
I'm multitasking.
Hey,
I'm working on the newsletter.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to share with everybody, too, that's sort of new, and we haven't formalized it quite yet, but it is in place. We can actively start issuing coupon codes or school codes, but one thing that we're going to start pushing and we're going to formalize it a little bit more is we want schools to adopt Magic Blocks and help you know, sell Magic Blocks for us to their parents and to their communities. And we also want to give the schools a way to fund. Well, so we're going to give them a way to fundraise using Magic Blocks at the school.
Good, great. That's good. Is it for different organizations?
Anybody. It could be a home school or a daycare or an elementary school or whatever, or a museum. We've actually engaged in a couple of conversations with some museums. We're going to be doing some cross marketing with those guys as well here locally, And so, you know, we're exploring a lot of those activities and those campaigns because towards the end of the year, we really want to grow the user base more. We've been, up until now, we've really primarily been focused on getting content, getting books, talking to authors. And so we really haven't done a lot of advertising, a lot of marketing, which is why our overall user base and our overall sales isn't going through the roof right now, but it will.
You can't do everything at once. See, that's the thing.
Exactly.
I mean, you have to, and you don't want to put people in a system that isn't working right, and then they're all going to be mad and they'll go out. So this way you have to perfect it. Yeah. That's how it is now. Yeah.
I just want to say, Jason, that I think it's great that you're thinking about doing a fundraiser type opportunity, and the only reason why I say that is Mike has went back to school this week, and on Tuesday was, I don't want to really call it an open house because it was really just for the parents, but we had about a half hour where all the parents were in the gym, and our school used to be a Title I school, and for anybody who doesn't know what a Title I school is, you'll hear schools talk about, like, oh, we want to be a Title I, we want to be a Title I. And the reason why schools want to be a Title I, depending on how you look at the economic classes, you'd think, well, I don't want my school to be a Title I because it's really meaning that you have over 50% of your school has low-income families in it who can't afford school lunches or to pay for, like, the different school fees, whatever type stuff. However, it's good that your school's a Title I because they get anywhere from 60 to 100,000 additional money for their budget being a Title I school.
Yep.
And
my daughter's middle America now that's getting affected by this. So I mean,
That's what I was gonna say because I live in a middle income neighborhood, and my daughter's school.
Now.
Yeah, because my son was there before. Now my daughter's is at the elementary school, and when my son left, it had just become it had just won the Title I status, and so for the last 5 years they've had the Title I funding, and they lost it this year by like 1 or 2%. And so that's like, $60,000 to $100,000 out of their pocket. And so now the school has to do fundraisers. And they are so determined not to do the typical cookie dough and gift wrap fundraiser because everybody hates those dang fundraisers. And so this is a great thing because it's something that, schools wouldn't mind promoting and basically selling to you know, the neighborhood and to
exactly.
family.
Exactly. It's
and
a
friends
win-win
and
for
parents.
Everybody. We have schools pushing literacy and also making money at the same time and helping the creative industry, i.e. you guys, the authors and illustrators who are creating the books and trying to make a living off these books. And so that's the whole idea.
Well,
because I
like to donate to different causes in my books, and because I think, like, even the writers, I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, I myself wanted to give like $1 a book or whatever to each book, because most people don't realize that authors don't make what they think, because when you're on Amazon, they take some of the money, and so you can't really just say I'll give you half of it, because you have to pay for the book a lot of times, and nobody wants to do that. But you know, if everybody took $1 from their books, and everybody went together on something, they could really like feed some hungry children, because we have a lot of hungry children here. And there's been 60 Minutes has said, you know, they've had a lot of things on it about, you know, children that are not eating. And so it is not just lower income that we're talking about America now, what's happening, you know, and this is what, you know, I think it's
exactly.
a great idea that we could all do things like this. I want to, you know, because I think it's really important that we start helping out, because I think, you know, no kid should be hungry. I mean, they shouldn't be, because it was, you know, they're going to school. We want these kids to read and do all of this and eat, because they're going to bed hungry. So I
we're going to try and formalize the program a little
great.
Bit more. We'll have a landing page that explains the program and allows schools and agencies or, you know, organizations to sign up for it. But basically, if they email us at teachers@magicblocks.com or fundraising@magicblocks.com, we will issue them a code, so we can work through email initially right now until we've set up the program and the site and everything. But if they want to email us, we'll issue them a code, a special unique code for their school or their organization. And then what they can do is whenever somebody signs up using that coupon code, we will issue them back $1 for every one-year subscription that they sell. So for every $19.99 one-year subscription that they sell through either their own parent network or their community, they'll earn $1 back. And that's just the starting point.
Once
increase the prices, we'll increase the share back for that, for each fundraising purchase as well. But
I myself am interested in doing something like that too. So Virginia, you know, we should look into this too, because it's a good thing. Because when you talk about this, this is a good thing to do. You know.
No, I agree. I mean, well, because when my book Baby Saint Sugar Paw came out, I teamed up with First Book. I teamed up with them the first year of the release of my book. And anytime somebody bought my book, was about half the money, because it was books I bought. So I could easily, you know, take a smaller cut for the sale of my book. But anytime someone bought a book through my website, half the cover price went into a fund, and then I turned around and bought 100 books to donate of my picture book to First Book.
Right.
So,
I think this is a great thing.
It's something I'll be bringing up to my PTO, that's for sure.
Right. I think it's a great idea, and I think that we maybe, you know, as authors can probably figure out some ways to do something like this. And, well, I know Frida's book, Frida, are you still on? Because Frida's book is donated, you know, all the proceeds are donated.
Yes, I'm listening to y'all.
Right.
Yeah, this is a passion of mine. I mean, one of the things that I'm personally motivated to be successful in life is so that I can have enough free cash flow to put it back into American businesses or, you know, charities and things like that. And starting with schools. I mean, if you look at the way the economy has beat us down over the last couple of years, the schools are the first ones to get cut. And it's amazing because, like, I live in California, and when they're talking about cutting the budget because California almost went bankrupt this year, they're immediately cutting school budgets. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're going to keep, you know, some other thing that doesn't really matter, but you're going to fire a bunch of teachers? That doesn't make sense.
We actually were talking about this. Bennett Pomeranz was on our show, and he's a reviewer, and he was talking about that they were going to want to close libraries now. We had this on one of our shows, right, a few weeks ago, I think it was. When we were talking about that, and this is because really we have to, this is about kids. I mean, and the kids need an education, and they need to read, because that's they have to read, and it's not a, you know, it's not a good thing to start cutting this. This will have kids that don't read it. That's bad. You know, we need to have
exactly.
Kids
that
read.
Yep.
Well, yeah. I really think that you have a really good idea, Jason. It really is.
Yeah, I think so too.
I can see it going far. You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have a limit as to how many books an author can put on the site?
No, not at all. I mean,
okay.
the system, the way that the distribution system works, it's completely balanced in terms of, you know, it's really just about how many reads each book gets every month out of the total number of reads. So it's an evenly distributed model, right? It's not unbalanced. So it doesn't really matter how many books we have. It really comes down to how many people are reading the books and how much revenue we collected for the month.
And I think when you
Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to ask you, Jason. Can people send you the book if they have no computer skills? Can they send you the book and you do the you put it on? I guess that would.
You
be
know, I've done that twice now, and. I've done it, and I've actually charged people for that time because it does take a lot longer.
Yeah, that takes a lot of time. You got to scan the book in. You have to scan.
And it doesn't
really
come out that great either. It comes out a little bit blurry and fuzzy, and it's not a very great. So I kind of want to lean away from that. But if it's the only absolute way that it would work, and you know, and so in the two cases that I had to do it in, she had a physical copy of the book. And the publisher went out of business, and all the digital files were gone. So, I mean, there's no other choice.
Oh.
But there are professional companies.
Jan, but don't they have a digital file at all?
I was just asking the question because I do know people who cannot do anything but email. So I was wondering what he would do if somebody.
No, but if they have a disk or something, if they have something, then they can. Digitally,
sure. You can mail us a disk if you have. I mean, we prefer a PDF file or JPEG images. That's standard. If they don't have the digital files, there's ways to scan the book in, and there's cheap ways to do it, and then there's really expensive ways to do it. And so, there are professional companies out there that focus on scanning in documents and scanning in books, and they come out pretty well, but it costs a bit of money. So.
I know that people have problems, you know, with doing that. So that's the reason I was asking.
Yeah, but as long as if they can get a digital, then he can do it. They must, if they have a book made though from a publisher, they probably have some sort of a disc, you know, that they could probably send him or get another copy of the disc to send to him.
Right. Well, even a PDF file, I'm sure most people should have a PDF file.
I wanted to comment.
Okay.
I wanted to say that I think what he's doing with the charity is wonderful. Trying to put back in the community. I mean, I'm not trying to plug Bess here, but we just had someone buy 5,000 copies and donate.
Yeah, because it's donating to kids. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the main thing. I think authors want their works read. But I think giving back to the community, I think you get a lot more in return.
Yeah.
And I just want to say I commend him for doing that.
Yeah, I do too. It's great. Yeah, I'd like to be a part of that too. I think it is a good thing because that's what one of the things that people have to do now is they have to help each other, you know. And, yeah, most authors know that, you know, a lot of the newer authors don't make a lot of money. And so, but that's okay. So at least if they feel like they're doing something, I think that's a better thing, you know, to feel, you know, and I agree with you on that. And that is what the best of book, you know, people can also donate to like their physical books and then the kids get books, you know. So I think all of these things that people are doing now, and Jason, when you do this, I think it's a great idea. I really do, because people have to recognize the fact that books are expensive, but we need our kids reading, you know. And
yeah,
that's
exactly.
Really, like, you know. And
the way that we can all help together, I guess, is just refer your local, you know, schools or teachers to us, have them check out the site. Within the next few weeks or so, we're going to be standing up a page, and we'll do a little promotion around it, try and get some attention around it, and then we'll just go from there. But yeah, I mean, if there's anybody who wants to start today, just email us and we'll set up the code for you, and then you guys can start basically just sharing the link out on your Facebook pages or in your, your school newsletters and we'll also help you with any kind of flyers or assets or things that need to be created.
I'm interested. Me something, I'll put it out. Yeah, I'll put it out.
Okay.
Because
for
I'm
sure.
interested in that. I really am. You know, I just think it's a great thing to do, and I just, you know, I am, we're all affected by this because we, you know, and we're all writers, you know, and especially the children's. But I think now that you said that, you know, some of the older, you know, older kids, I think that there's a lot of different authors that might be interested in doing this now, because I think if that market is, you know, because there's a lot of young adult that, you know, that are for 11 and to 13, you know. And
yeah.
Well, I was going to say to that too, Marcia, is, I mean, because I know you and I have talked about this on a few of the different shows that we do. I mean, I know you've talked about Good Story is a Good Story. We've talked about on the Writing Mama show in the past.
Yep.
And I think we touched on even with John Wilson, you know, 2 weeks ago on the what is success show. But, you know, the question comes up with the whole with the e-readers, you know, and children's books becoming e-books, you know, how, you know, successful is that really going to be? Because,
right.
you know, everybody's like, oh, do you really see, you know, a six-year-old curling up on mommy and daddy's lap and reading a book, you know, on an iPad or on a smartphone or at the computer? And, yeah, they are doing that, and I can say that because I have a six-year-old, and she does exactly that when I get e-books. And
right.
second, she sees me looking at a book. She's, like, you know, pushing me out of the way and trying to climb up into my chair. Even my 18-month-old does that. But, you know, with the 10 and up-year-olds, they are already starting to read e-books because they're older. I mean, you know, little kids, it's a little different sometimes. You know, it's hit and miss because, you know, some of them do like to have the novelty of the hardcover, you know, picture book in their hand. But when it comes to more of your novel-type book, it's just like the adult genre that's taken off in e-books because there's less pictures, and so it makes more sense. And, like, my son, he loves his smartphone. When he's waiting for his bus to come for school, you know, he'll sit there and, you know, read a few chapters of whatever, you know. Sometimes he plays games like Angry Birds or whatever. But, you know, once in a while he'll actually sit there and read a book.
Right. But, no, I think also, and, you know, because, you know, the truth of the matter is, though, the books are not, they're very expensive a lot of times. And I think, you know, the iPad and they're expensive, these things, but it's a one-shot deal. You know, the phones, the kids have the phones anyway now. And so, you know, and they have a lot of different, and the Nook and everything. And it's just a really good way. And their own computers. They have, a lot of them have little notebooks. And, you know, I have friends
who have, I mean, granted, I live in the Silicon Valley, and so everyone here is technology averse, right?
Yeah.
But I have friends who have, like, I was shocked. I mean, even myself, I'm like, you have multiple iPads per kid in the same family, and the parents have an iPad. So I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And it just shows you the kids are, the iPad is a very much a kid tool, and we might as well give them some content on there that they can learn from, not just play with.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
right.
I agree. Because, like, when my son gets bored, it's so funny, the first thing he does is he'll pull out his smartphone and, you know, start doing stuff on it because he's just like, I'm bored.
I think they all do. I look at
here.
I see 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds are sitting there playing, and you know people think it's not good for them. You know, it is good for them because their motor skills. I mean, they're learning different. These things are not bad for kids. You know,
You also say they're not bad for kids in the fact if you have something like, you know, like Magic Blocks on there that they can access because, you know, again, it's you know, like Jason said, they're not sitting there just playing, you know, Angry Birds on the.
Right.
Different, you know.
Whatever it takes to get boys reading.
Yeah, whether we like it or not, or whether we want it to happen or not, it's happening. Schools are adopting iPads as training devices. More and more kids are doing homeschool. More and more kids are doing distance learning. They need content on the web. They need content on portable devices. We're in a digital age, whether we like it or not, and we might as well embrace it.
Exactly. This is the way it is.
You know, I love physical paper books and just as much as the next person, but at the same time, I think this is just, like I said before, it's an additional resource for parents. It's not a replacement library for their physical books.
Right, and it's reality now. It is. It's here. And, you know, anything to get boys to read books is a good thing because a lot of boys, girls read a lot. but boys sometimes don't. And that's what Harry Potter did for boys, is they got them interested.
Right.
When I first, the first Harry Potter, when I went to the show, I couldn't believe these boys are sitting there at 13 years old, they're not moving. And I'm thinking, what a good thing for that, because you never have that, you know. They just do.
Yep.
You know, I mean,
you know,
so
what,
those things.
And you know what I'm thinking, too, and of course this is a mom, you know, talking, who definitely has a teenage boy in the house, who, and all through my kids, you know, and I was just thinking about this the other day, because when my son was growing up, I was, you know, a buyer in fashion. So I was nowhere near, I wasn't an avid reader. We had books in the house, but it wasn't like, you know, when you have a writer in the house with books everywhere, there's definitely a dynamic difference. So he, besides being a boy, not having my influence on top of it like it should have been, I think is why he's even more of a reluctant reader. And then when I had my middle daughter, I was starting to get into writing. So she has a little bit, and her dad loves books. So she has a little bit better love of books, but she's still not as much of an avid reader as we'd like. But our 18-month-old, because now I'm very inundated with what I do in the writing world, and her dad, you know, again, is an avid reader. I mean, she sees books and she squeals. She thinks it's the greatest thing. And I think about that. And now with Dominic being older and e-books, you know, starting to take off like they are, I actually see him more involved in reading. And I think it's because he's not sitting there with a paper book in his hand. He likes the fact it's on the digital device. And so I think for reluctant reader boys, it's kind of more of a novelty for them because it's on the computer. It's not, you know.
Well,
and
they're
used to it now. And they can hide and they can also hide the fact they're reading. Because I think that's one reason why boys don't like to read, because they kind of think, oh, they're going to think I'm a nerd, because here I am with my nose in a book.
Yeah.
Where when
it's
on their smartphone or on their iPad or whatever, they can hide it easier if they're reading something.
Yeah.
I know that's really how it is now, you know. And this is the way it is. You're right. This is it's here now. It's the age of the computers, the iPad. This is what it is. We have to accept it. And so as we do that, that's what we're happy that kids have a lot to read now. That's a good thing. I think it's changed, so it's good. I think it's all for the better. All right, so I
absolutely. You know, our vision really is to create this library, grow it to thousands of titles for the age group that we're targeting, and make it available on as many different devices and platforms, and even syndicate it out through other sites as well. So there's a lot of kid-based dashboard sites and things like that that they've come to me and we've talked about getting them books into their site. And so, you know, because we're a platform, we're not just an application, we can do those things. And we have APIs. So if you're a developer or you have a kid's website or an application or a tablet device, we're going to be working with those guys to give them access to this content, obviously for a price, because, you know, they're going to be reading the content. They're going to be letting their users read the content, so they would pay for it the same way.
Jason, this is JD. Are you thinking about adding classics, some of the classic picture books and things like that as well? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. I mean, I'm really dependent on the authors and publishers to come bring those to me.
Okay.
I've been talking to an author who's been in the industry and has quite a few well-known books for the past 30 years, and they have a catalog of about 100 titles, and it's trying to get them to you know, work with me. I think they've just been busy on some other things. So, but she has expressed interest in adding her books to our library. It's just a matter of tracking them down. So that's the thing, you know, people are busy. Their books,
but the whole thing is,
so
it's not really hard
jumping.
To do. I mean, they don't. All they have to do is put it on there, and you do the rest. So it's not like it's, you know, that's why, you know, once it's done, like you said, it's done. It's on there, and that's it, you know.
Exactly.
Right, so it's not like they have to go back in and check it, because you're doing
it. In this particular case, she's probably one of the people who has the books as physical books, because they've been in the industry for so long. They didn't have PDF files.
Well, that's what I was going to say. From what I've seen, even within e-books, you know, a lot of people have made comments. Well, I don't see the big traditional publishers, you know, putting the classics up, you know, as e-books on Amazon yet. And I'm starting thinking that's because they have to sit there and scan them and then, like, you know, get them cleaned up so they're not all grainy like you're talking about. And it takes time. And the publishers, you know, they have so many other titles, new titles and stuff that they're working on. That it's a long process, so you know.
And it's probably copyright issues too, though, right?
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah,
would,
some of them. I bet that is probably the case, especially
if the author died, no longer living.
Yeah, well, the copyright. Yeah, because you're not signing over, but you don't sign anything over to Jason. You're just putting it there,
right,
like you're doing on Amazon. So
yeah,
you know,
exactly. That's a question we get a lot. Is, you know,
right.
Do you take any rights to my book? And, no,
right,
it's non-exclusive. Right,
right.
Go put it on Amazon. Put it on iTunes. Put it on anywhere
right.
else.
Anywhere, right?
Exactly. One distribution channel for you that you can, you know, get some money from and some exposure from, you know.
Right. I think the fundraising is a great idea. So I think that'll really draw a lot of people to it, because I think it's a very attractive thing that people want to do now. They want to give, and I do too. So, and I think this would be a perfect way if we can get something going like this. All right. So if Claudia never came, I don't know what happened, but she was your first one on there, and she has a great book, and she loves being on your site. I know that because I've talked to her about it. And you know,
yes.
Everybody that's on there likes it, and we all want you to do really well because it's just a great idea. So, I mean, I'm so glad that you are celebrating. As soon as I got your email, I go, yeah, celebrate it with us. I'm calling him, you know. But I'm so glad you came here. I mean, to me, this is, you know, because I'm on it, JD's on it, Virginia's going to get on it, Frida's on it, you know, and it's about, you know, it's kind of sharing. And you feel like you're sharing with people when you're on that, because the kids are getting a benefit at not a high price. So that's a good thing. It's
exactly.
A good Christmas. Well, it's a good Christmas or Hanukkah gift to give kids is a membership.
Yeah, you can actually go on to the pricing page and you can buy a 1-year gift subscription.
Yeah, I was thinking of doing that. I think that's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah, you just basically send it to anybody who has an email address. You know, so when you select it, you add it to your cart, you pay $20. And then you specify the email who you want to send it to, and then that person will get an email, and they'll be able to sign in and use that gift certificate to start reading.
Yeah, because you know what? If you go buy a book, a couple of books, it's more than $20. So this way, they get an assortment of anything they want.
Exactly.
Because if you're giving a gift, you don't know what books the kids have. You know, you have no idea, you know, what they have, and this way they can pick out what they like to read. I think it's a great idea.
And what I was going to say, too, Marcia, about that, you know, like, because, like, especially for my 6-year-old, when we do birthday parties and stuff, I mean, generally most parents, like, tell their kids, okay, well, when we go shopping, you have to get your friend something that's $20 or less.
Yeah,
and so
right.
This is a great way to do that without, you know, giving them a toy like a Barbie or, you know, a Transformer that they're going to play with, like, you know, who knows, maybe just that day or, you know, for a couple, a year or two, and then it gets destroyed or they just don't play
it
anymore.
They take all the pieces apart and they don't know how to put it together.
Yeah,
it's in a plastic
bag. That will last, for them. But, you know, the whole point of our show is, you know, what is success? Well, I mean, and I know Marcia and I, you know, we talked about when we were talking about what to rename the show, you know, how the reason why we picked what is success is because there's so many different answers to that question. But I think
it's
the
not always
one
about
answer,
money.
Especially
it's not about money.
The show is
right.
Well, yeah, but yeah, that's not about money. But I mean, honestly, today when we're having the show, it really clicked in my head. You know, what is success? It's our future. It's our future. Who's our future? Our kids.
Right. Exactly. That's, you know, and that's a good way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't say anything bad about your children today, which is very good. You did a good job. Or your mother, or your father. Nothing.
I don't even say being
or
sad
your husband.
About them. I just—they're just great examples because they—I have a very diverse family, and they all end up doing weird stuff. That's just perfect.
Well, you didn't. Let's put it this way: you didn't upset anybody. That's a good thing. All right, well, Jason, we enjoyed having you on. It was great. You know,
thank
anytime you,
you
want to come on, you're, you know, a good story too, you can come on. You know, if you have something to promote, just let us know. And if you have anything you wanted to promote, just, you know, send it to me and I will, because I think it's a great, I just think you're doing great things with it. And I liked it from the very beginning. And Frida, thank you for telling me about it, because we might not have known about it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time. This
yeah,
great.
I think that's been great.
Thanks,
and then you probably... I was going to say, Marcia, we probably should go over what our shows are that are coming up.
Oh,
at
good
least
idea.
Our,
okay.
Our next few shows.
Thanks,
so we have next week on August 23rd, A Good Story is a Good Story with Marcia Casper-Cook as your host. And I don't know who your guest is, so why don't you tell us,
Marcia. Okay, we have Fran Lewis and Bennett Pomerantz. They are book reviewers. And then we also have three really good authors that are self-published. And, well, actually, Tracy Slatton was – traditionally published, and now she is traditionally she's publishing her own. She's got her own, you know, publishing going on. And then we have Larry Sheridan, and we have Gerard D. Marigny. I always say his wrong. I say his name wrong all the time. D. Marigny. Anyway, and his book is Watch Me Never Fry Him. I could say the name, but I can't ever say that. He's been on my show before. They've all been on except for Larry, and. It's going to be a good show because we're really going to talk about self-publishing and what we can do out there to get the stigma away from self-publishing, because these people have really good books. I mean, and they're really good authors. And the fact that people have to self-publish is just because publishers aren't paying attention to some of these really good authors. And so we're going to have that discussion, and we're going to have Fran and Bennett talk about reviewing, because everybody needs reviews, but it's also one person's opinion, so we don't want people to, if they get a bad review, just stop writing, you know. So these are, that's what the show is, and it's going to be a good show. And Sandra Elrod will be helping, which is Fran's assistant, and she's loaned her to us, and I love Sandra, she's great, you know. So we all stayed on the air. Nobody got cut off today. This is really good. This is like,
we
had a
good
storm here. This is really, really good. All right, and thank everybody for listening.
Wait, I'm not ending it.
You have another show. You have another show Wednesday. I'm not ending it.
Yeah, we have, and then following the Tuesday, What's a Good Story, on Wednesday the 24th of August, we have the Writing Mama Show, which isn't completely gone. It's just a once-a-month show that I still do because that's the name of my blog. So Marcia, of course, pops in on there and joins me, which she's going to do, of course, that week. And Jan, you're more than welcome to join us on there, too. We're going to be talking about blogging and the different types of blog tours that are out there that are offered to authors. And then basically, you know, how to make your blog successful. And I'm working on getting some bloggers calling in throughout the show to kind of that are successful with blogging to share some of their tips and comments on that. And then we don't have any shows other than those two next week. So definitely tune in.
One never knows with me.
Unless something pops up.
Yes. If someone says, "Oh, I have an idea," I go, "Oh, good, I have a show."
All right. Well, everybody have a good weekend
yes,
and
a
good
weekend
night.
Yes, a good weekend. And thank you. And thank you. Good night,
thank you
everybody.
Guys. You too.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye, bye. Jason. Good night. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Follow me to the world of ink.